That's a type of flicker that occurs very commonly in the lighting industry due to power through the alternating current of the mains power grid. But the most common way that those lights are dimmed, even on direct current, is a system called pulsed width modulation. So in order to get around that, we do what's called pulsed width modulation, where the lights are always in an on or always in an off state, and then you can modulate the lighting intensity by modulating the duty cycle, or what percent time on versus what percent time off.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with nonlinear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Poultry Star is a unique feed ingredient that includes a prebiotic and probiotic, and it's designed specifically for poultry. Improve gut health with Poultry Star. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/poultrystar. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Zoetis Hatchery Health Team helps you raise field-ready birds with a strong immune foundation. Learn more at zoetis.com.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Korver, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this episode interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. Aaron Steffen, and he is the Director of Research and Innovation for Signify Animal Lighting. Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, Aaron.
Hi, thank you.
It's good to have you on the show. You have a very interesting and maybe varied educational pathway. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a trained biologist. I've been doing research in biology for all of my adult life. I did my undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, focusing on microbiology, understanding how microorganisms talk to one another. And then I transitioned to my doctoral PhD program at the Johns Hopkins University, where I researched the sense of smell in mice. And then after that, I did a postdoctoral research fellowship at University of California, San Diego, where I was researching how plants sense drought stress. So I tell people that what I am at my core is a sensory biologist. So it doesn't matter the organism, it doesn't matter the system. What matters to me is understanding how organisms sense their environment and how they respond to it. So it was kind of an exciting opportunity when I got to come work for what was called Once at the time. Now we're Once by Signify, or Signify Lighting. And basically continuing with my sensory biology background, getting to understand how in this case, poultry, swine, fish, how they interact with their light environment and how they sense that and how do they react to that.
Every day you're up before the sun, caring for your animals, your land, and your livelihood. You don't cut corners, and neither do we. At Signify Animal Lighting, we use light as a tool, backed by science to support growth, comfort, and performance. We've spent decades studying how animals respond to light, how it guides their day, reduces stress, and supports the healthy growth you depend on. We turn that knowledge into lighting systems that help you create the right environment from sunrise to sundown. Better light, better animals. Better results with Signify.
So let's talk a little bit about your work with light. I hear a lot of people talk about flicker. What do people mean by flicker?
Yeah, so flicker is really kind of a topic that keeps coming up in this space quite often lately. And so everyone kind of knows at its core what flicker is. You think of a candle flickering, the lights are flashing. It's not consistent, it's non-uniform lighting in some way. And this comes into play once we start talking about artificial lighting systems that are powered by the electrical grid or by electrical modulation in some way. The reason we don't really like the term flicker, I don't like the term flicker, is because it's used too broadly in some ways. So the broader term that, the lighting industry uses is what we call temporal light modulation. So it's the light being modulated in the temporal or time domain in some way. And so when we use the term flicker, what we're really describing is a much more constrained set of that temporal light modulation. Oftentimes we're talking about something that's predictable and repeatable, and that happens a lot with the electrical grid. But when you're powering these with artificial energy sources like electricity, the electrical grid, for instance, depending on where you are in the world, is either running at 60 hertz in the United States and Canada, and then it's running at 50 hertz in Europe and much of the rest of the world. That's a type of flicker that occurs very commonly in the lighting industry due to power through the alternating current of the mains power grid. But the most common way that those lights are dimmed, even on direct current, is a system called pulsed width modulation. So in order to get around that, we do what's called pulsed width modulation, where the lights are always in an on or always in an off state, and then you can modulate the lighting intensity by modulating the duty cycle, or what percent time on versus what percent time off.
So if a producer goes into their barn and they're perceiving a flicker, it's likely that their birds are also perceiving that. But it's not necessarily the other way around, where there could be serious problems and a producer wouldn't perceive it.
And that's kind of what spurred this whole conversation on flicker, is because undoubtedly, when you have a chicken farm and operation, sometimes there are problems and people are looking to say, hey, what's going on here? Where's the source of this problem? And we find a lot of times that people will say, oh, you know, I've heard this flicker thing can be a problem. And you can end up with a flicker meter, a tool that can measure the light. And so that's something I want to talk about in this session a little bit, is how do we measure flicker and how do we ensure whether poultry can perceive it or not? But yeah, there's this, it's kind of, in some ways, I'd say a scapegoat, or it's a little overblown as far as, do the lights being modulated at a certain frequency affect the chickens negatively? And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. It certainly can happen. But it's a very narrow scope in which that could happen. But you're exactly right that if a farmer walks into a barn and they see the lights flickering, that's a red flag and needs to be addressed immediately. And if that kind of flickering is happening, that's not solely due to the lights being modulated by this repeating electrical grid, or even by pulse width modulation. In that case, when you see the lighting flicker, it usually means that there's a component that's failing in the lighting system itself, or more commonly, the power grid that's supplying those lights is inconsistent. So, you know, again, if the power grid is being powered by 60 hertz alternating current, somewhere, you know, at a power plant, there's a generator that's spinning and it's generating this sinusoidal electrical wave at 60 hertz. And say if that generator isn't running consistently, but maybe speeds up a little and slows down a little, then all of the circuitry in that light bulb that's designed to handle 60 hertz, maybe it's ranging from 62 hertz to 58 hertz or something like that, but that little bit of synchronization gets off, and that can cause all sorts of flickering. So oftentimes that flickering is kind of what we call a dirty power mains or power grid, combined with some dimming technology that can't necessarily handle it fully. And then you end up with visible flicker that both the farmer can see and the chickens can see. And so if those are observed, it's definitely a problem. But if a farmer walks into a barn and doesn't see flicker, like I said, there is a narrow case in which he or she might not see the flickering lights, but a chicken may perceive it. And the only way to really evaluate that would be with the right flicker meter, with the capability of measuring the right parameters about that flicker.
So in general, you would say that this is probably not a major welfare concern?
So there actually, I think in a lot of ways, this flicker thing, it's it's good and it's bad from a welfare discussion standpoint, because it's great that it raises people's questions about animal welfare. Any discussion over animal welfare I'm totally in favor of having, because animal welfare is top of mind for what we're doing. But like I said, it could be overblown. And so I don't want to say that it's not a concern for animal welfare. There's very few studies that have been shown in which flickering light has been evaluated for the impacts on welfare. But as far as I've seen, I haven't seen any documented evidence that flickering of any frequency actually affects animal welfare negatively. That's actually surprising. I'm talking specifically for chickens. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. What I'm saying is that there hasn't been the right studies to show that yet. So there has been a study in European starlings. So European starlings can see light flickering. They're even more sensitive than chicken. Their critical fusion frequency is more like 130 hertz. And in those cases, if you give a European starling flickering light, say at, I can't remember the exact numbers, but say at 100 hertz or maybe 70 hertz, something that they clearly can perceive. There has been documented evidence of elevated cortisol, which is an indicator of acute stress. And so it's very possible that flicker can cause, so perceivable flicker could cause stress in chickens. But so far, even tests where they have used perceivable flicker rates, something below, say, 80 hertz in chickens, still there's no clear documented evidence that that's elevating their stress levels.
Aaron, you've talked a little bit about the research that's been done with flicker. Do different types of poultry, so you mentioned starlings are different, humans are different, but do different types of poultry, broilers, layers, turkeys, breeders, have more or less sensitivity to flicker, or are poultry species fairly consistent?
So there has been work looking at chickens and looking at turkeys, and the cutoff values for chickens and turkeys, I think also ducks have been done. More or less, the numbers, the cutoffs are not vastly different between those species. So the reason behind the sensitivity of flicker comes down to two things. The first is a hard stop, which is the physiology of how animals perceive light. So, you know, there's a whole molecular cascade of events that happens where light is absorbed by photoreceptors in the eye. That's translated through chemical reactions that ultimately result in either depolarization or hyperpolarization of your neurons, which sends signal to the brain. And there's a step in there that's enzymatic, meaning it's an actual chemical reaction that a protein has to change and act on a substrate in order to work. And that itself is rate limiting. And so that's really what slows the entire thing down. So that means if you're sending light that's pulsing at a certain frequency, that machinery is kind of buffering all of that signal and taking it as an average and then sending that to your brain. So there's no way that, say like at say 2000 hertz, there's no way that any light could be perceived at that frequency by the animal, simply because it's being pulsed at much faster rates than any of that signaling machinery is capable of doing. The second part of it though is the ecology of the animal. So depending on what environment that animal had evolved in, grown in, it's going to change how sensitive they need to be. So I mentioned before, like European starlings as an example, or another fast sensing one would be what's called a flycatcher. It's a species of bird that by its name preys on flies. So you can imagine that if you're a bird that needs to catch a fly in midair, you need to have faster temporal resolution to catch that fly. But if you're a different species that's foraging, just picking at seeds and things on the ground that aren't moving, maybe your frequency, your critical fusion frequency doesn't have to be as sensitive. And so, yeah, turkeys, ducks, and chickens have a different ecology to some extent, but none of them are diving and catching flies in midair. And so But ultimately, that's why the rate of sensitivity of these animals isn't all that different from even humans, because we all share the exact same machinery that's underlying how we see.
But that's really interesting. So what do you think the research gaps are? What questions should we answer next, or what are the most important questions that we need to answer yet?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think you alluded to it a little bit ago about how does wavelength or color composition impact these cutoffs. There has been a little work on ultraviolet A, that the sensation of UVA in chickens is more sensitive from a frequency standpoint than some of the other wavelengths. And again, it's not like it's vastly different, but overall the critical fusion frequency for UVA perception is a little bit higher. But I would be interested to understand more about, depending on the color composition and the frequency that's actually used in most of the lighting systems, how perceivable it is. One thing I didn't get into that's a really important discussion on temporal light modulation in the lighting industry. So far, all I've been describing is whether or not you can perceive the light directly. But there are secondary issues with temporally modulated light that can come into play. And I'll just name those really quickly. One is called the stroboscopic effect, and the other is called the phantom array effect. And to me, they're kind of two in the same thing. So a really good explanation of the stroboscopic effect is, imagine you're in a dark room, and imagine there's a light that's pulsing fast, but not very fast, say 100 hertz. So that's fast enough that you would look at that light source and you would say it's not flickering. But now if I take a ball and I throw it in the air, that ball will be illuminated at one position. It'll be not illuminated as it's traveling, as that light goes off. And then as it comes on again, will illuminate in a second place. So your perception of that ball flying in the air actually ends up being what you would perceive in that situation. Is you would see that ball in various positions simultaneously. And that's called the stroboscopic effect. And it's kind of fascinating and fun to try if you ever have the opportunity. I have like a demonstration in the lab that I sometimes set up, and it's pretty interesting. And then the other aspect is called the phantom array effect. And to me, it's the same thing, but instead of an object moving in a pulsing light situation, it's actually you moving your eyeballs or your head in a way. So basically, when people move their eyes left and right, that's called a saccade. And so if you have a lighting source that's pulsing and you move your eyes left and right, you would actually perceive multiple light sources, again, because those lights are hitting different parts of your retina at nearly the same time. And a chicken, their saccades are very limited, but their head movements are quite dramatic. And so that's another example where they might actually see some sorts of phantom array effect. So I'd be interested if people could start piecing apart research-wise, what are the effects of direct visibility of pulsed light and where that cutoff actually lies? And secondly, like you said, what are the welfare implications of visible light flicker? And so a few groups have just started to look at this. One notable group, I'd say, is by Karen Schwein-Lardner at the University of Saskatchewan. And they started to look at it, but even then, the resolution is fairly limited at this point. You know, we can only look at a certain set of frequencies. And I think that it'd be really interesting to start dialing that in and looking directly at, you know, right near that cutoff value of what the chicken's vision is, say like 100 hertz or something like that, something that's just slightly above it and just slightly below it. See what are the biological implications of that and what are the welfare implications of that? Because it could be really interesting to understand that a little bit more.
So from a practical standpoint then, what should our listeners take away from our discussion today? What do they need to know in their day-to-day operations?
Yeah, so I didn't get too much into it, and maybe if I just take 1 minute to explain that, like, if we are measuring flicker, we need to be able to differentiate visible flicker from non-visible flicker, because flicker is too broad of a term. And so when you start measuring it, so far what I've been describing is mostly frequency-based. How many hertz is that light flickering? But there are other ways that measure flicker that are also important. So you'll often hear people measure flicker from what's called the flicker index or a flicker percent, which are two related measurements. But the flicker index and flicker percent are basically related to when the light is at its brightest versus when it's at its dimmest and what that difference in percent looks like. And that's an important measurement by itself, but it's not sufficient. And this is basically the biggest myth I'd like to dispel in this podcast, is flicker percent or flicker index is not sufficient to measure flickering light. There's no way for you to know based on those numbers whether a chicken will perceive or not perceive that. The flicker frequency, on the other hand, is a better measurement, because at least it's measuring whether it's fast enough or not fast enough for a chicken to see. But that too isn't sufficient without knowing the flicker percentage. So the only time and place that flickering light is perceivable by a chicken is if it's flickering slow enough to be perceived and at a high enough percentage or index to be perceived. So you somehow have to combine that frequency and percent, or frequency and index values. So you basically need two values to calculate and understand whether flicker is perceptible or not.
Are there resources that a producer can use to assess whether flicker might be an issue in their facility?
Yeah, so because of those two values being required, the lighting industry has developed additional measurements that are used to measure. So basically, there's formulas that combine that frequency and percent together into a single value, and depending on the species. And so the agreed upon standard for humans is this measurement, what's called PSTLM, and that's the human flicker visibility metric. And that one is really simple, because if that number is above a value of 1, you consider most people able to perceive that flicker. And if that value is below 1, most people wouldn't perceive that. And likewise, scientists at Signify, I'm part of this team, we've developed a similar type metric based on birds, and we call that one the avian flicker visibility metric. And that one is really useful. Again, say if the number is above 1, it could mean that it's perceptible, but if it's below 1, it's likely not perceptible. That one is calibrated to all birds, not just chickens, which means it's actually calibrated specifically to that flycatcher I was naming earlier, which means this avian flicker visibility metric, or AFVM, it's a very conservative measurement. So that means that if the value is below 1, it's certainly safe for the birds. And if it's above 1, it may or may not be safe for the birds. So how do you measure that? You need a flicker meter capable of measuring that. And so there's a few flicker meters on the market. I know we offer one ourselves. There's other flicker meters out there. This AFVM is not necessarily universally adopted yet. But the good news is that you can take any sort of temporally measured light data, and you can put it through the formula, which will output the AFVM. And so we have some tools available with or without our meter that are capable of calculating that.
And so then, depending on the outcome of that test, the producer could take corrective action in terms of their light, the bulbs, or the...
Exactly. So oftentimes, you know, like if you, for instance, had a light that was being driven by alternating current directly, you would take your flicker meter, you'd measure it, and what a likely outcome that you'd see is that it would say, we see that this light is being modulated at 120 hertz with a flicker index of 0.8 or something like that. And then associated with that would be an AFVM, a number that would indicate whether or not that's likely to be perceived by birds. And so then you could decide, oh, that AFVM is very high and this isn't working, or the number is low and we don't need to take any corrective action. Oftentimes it can pick up that noise in the electrical grid. And maybe you see that it was supposed to be modulated at a certain frequency based on the electrical system, but in fact it's being varied, or there's some sort of component on top of that. So there's this whole, like, call it Fourier transform, but basically you're taking something in the time domain and changing it into the frequency domain, and you can see all the subcomponents that come up to actually contribute to that light flickering. And you can say there's a dominant 120 hertz flicker, but underneath that, for whatever reason, there's a 10 hertz, and that 10 hertz would be really bad for a chicken, because that's basically putting them in a strobe light setting.
So obviously producers generally can't choose their electrical grid. So what if the problem is with the electrical grid? How do they deal with that?
So there are things that you can put between your electrical grid and your lighting system that kind of iron out the noise. Okay. I'm not an electrician or electrical engineer myself, so I don't know the exact terminology, but basically, say like an uninterruptible power supply would be an example that you put between your electrical grid and your lighting system, and it can clean up that electrical noise a lot. Oftentimes, it'll convert AC to DC and then convert it back to AC again to help buffer some of that.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. At Signify Animal Lighting, we use light as a tool, backed by science to support growth, comfort, and performance. Better light, better animals. Better results with Signify. Every poultry farmer worries about avian influenza. American Air Filter, with advanced filter technology to help keep barns safe from airborne disease, is teaming with J&D Manufacturing's ventilation experts, giving you more than just clean airflow. You're getting peace of mind. Together, American Air Filter and J&D help provide stronger protection, cleaner air, and healthier flocks. When every bird counts, count on your team of experts at J&D and American Air Filter. Learn more at jdaaf.com.
Well, Dr. Aaron Steffen, thanks so much for joining us today on the Poultry Podcast Show. But before we let you go, I've got a few questions for you, hopefully that are a little bit on the lighter side. So
sure.
What's your favorite poultry or agriculture or even work-related book or resource that's your go-to?
Yes, that's a good question. I really enjoyed reading was called Animals in Translation, and this is a book by Temple Grandin. So Temple Grandin is a PhD researcher who's made famous by transforming the cow or beef industry and really taking into consideration how animals, say, that are grown for food, how they're treated, how we design entire systems around those animals to enhance their welfare. And I find that really fascinating. I've had the joy of meeting Dr. Grandin personally, and she even autographed my book, and I consider that a cherished possession because of that.
How about outside of work? Do you have a favorite book or resource or a hobby?
Yeah, I'm very hobby rich. I like to do a lot of things, but lately I've been, for the last several years, I've been doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I find that really a intellectually challenging kind of hobby. It's kind of like a puzzle. There's so many different avenues to take. It's a really vibrant community, and I really enjoy it.
So engaging the mind and the body.
Yes.
And finally, in your opinion, what do you think is the most important characteristic for a person to have to be successful in your industry?
So I'm a scientist, and being a scientist, I think the number one thing one needs to have characteristically is to be a skeptic, or to be skeptical, and not to be heavily skeptical. I think I think to be inquisitive is really important, to be optimistic, and to be creative. But on top of all of that, know and understand when somebody presents an idea or offering to you, to maintain a certain level of skepticism and require evidence and proof of what that is that they're saying.
Great advice. Dr. Aaron Steffen, thanks so much.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much.
That concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is important to us. You can visit our website at wisenetics.com and learn more about all of our podcast segments for poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and even pet food. I'm Doug Corver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.